sugar, spice, and everything nice. These were the ingredients chosen to create
The Grace Curley Show. Radio, TV, print, Grace Curley does it all.
She sings, she dances, she acts.
I'm waiting by the door for my Pulitzer.
She sounds hideous.
She's just the worst.
Yeah, she's a wacko.
She is the devil. I'm in hell.
Now, here's the millennial with the mic.
She still leaves me both breathless and speechless.
I love her.
She is the best.
Somebody will ask you to say Grace.
Grace Curley.
Hello, 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 party people. Thank you for tuning in. As I told you before, when a group of Democrats, unhinged progressives like the ladies on The View, sit down with the J.D. Vance, which I think is a great thing. Like, I oftentimes wonder how useful things are when people just start screaming at each other. Like, think about the Abby Phillip panel on CNN. I've gotten to a point now where I don't think it's helping anything, and I don't even know how much there is an entertainment value there just to watch people speak over each other and scream at each other and not really have any fun or any light moments or any common ground. And I catch myself going, like, why are we doing this? Why are we even consuming it? It's just dividing people further and further. So there is a part of my brain that says, what's the point of going on The View? These women hate you. But the thing about J.D. Vance, and I'm not saying he's perfect, and there are things that he said before, or I've disagreed with before, but the thing that he is able to do is he's not so obsessed with being right all the time, even though he's very smart and he probably could dominate these people as far as facts go. He's a lot more interested in persuading people and in explaining things to people or in making a case to people and, like, kind of putting out an olive branch, which is definitely the harder thing to do in today's day and age, and it's also the less rewarded thing to do. He could have gone into The View, Matt, just looking for moments, just looking for contentious moments to dunk on these women and to make them look stupid. It wouldn't have been hard for him to do. But he really, there's this good faith attempt to have conversations that I really admire and I think we need more of. And I say that as probably more part of the problem than part of the solution, but I'd like to be more part of the solution. I think there's something really nice about someone who goes into a situation like this where there's so many people there who want to see him sound dumb, or they want to witness his downfall, and he's in there really trying to find common ground, trying to find things they agree on. And it's even part of how he presents things. He says, listen, no, I know. And to your point, and that's why I said this, and this is why. And there's just this kind of collaborative, hopeful optimism that he brings to a situation like that that is really powerful. And it's really hard to do. And he makes it look easy because he's very, very smart and he's very capable. But it's not easy to do. It's not easy to have a conversation with those women and not have it devolve into nasty bickering. They can't even do it amongst themselves. And they all agree with each other. So for him to come in as this lightning rod, supposedly, and still manage to keep it, for the most part, above board, and for Joy Behar during the break to tell him that she thinks he's okay. That was her comment to him. Do we have this cut, Matt?
I don't think we have that one. We have when she was drooling over the fact that how tall he was. Thought she was going to run into his arms at that point.
What? What?
Yeah, at the beginning when they came in, she goes, wow.
Is he having the Biden effect on Joy Behar? She's like, have a ding, ding, baby. You got everything. Let me hear this.
I was surprised at how tall you were. He's very tall.
Well, if you only see somebody on TV, you just see their, in my case, giant heads. So. It hides how tall I am. Yeah. That's right.
We are the table of big heads here.
So Alyssa, this is a show of MAGA Republicans, right? That's what my right, media team told me? Okay, good.
Yeah, dare I say it, Matt, he's kind of charming them. He's kind of charming them. Well, Matt, try to find me that cut if you could. Take your time. I know I'm throwing it at you. But there's a cut where J.D. Vance mentions that during one of the commercial breaks, Joy Behar had nice things to say to him. And I'm telling you right now, they are at more risk of blowback than J.D. Vance is, because people know who J.D. Vance is, but the Democrats have to walk this tightrope. They really, their fan base, and you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of the Al Smith dinner. When Trump showed up, Kamala Harris, I think she was asked, well, she was definitely asked to go. I think she was asked to have like a pretty major role in it. She refused. She didn't want to go. And so Trump went. And during the Al Smith dinner, he was over by Chuck Schumer and he was kind of razzing Chuck Schumer and he was grabbing him by the shoulders and kind of shaking him and talking about how long they've known each other. And I was watching it and I had this feeling of, and maybe it's like my own weakness, but I like seeing people get along. I know how divided politics are, but when these two opposite sides of the aisle have a moment of humanity and a shared laugh, it does give me hope that maybe all's not lost. And so I was watching it, and I was like, oh my God, that's so sweet. It's so funny. It's like, oh, he's giving him a hard time and Chuck Schumer's kind of like laughing and whatever. And the response from the left, though, when something like that happens is the opposite of my response. Their response is, why are you normalizing this person? Why are you allowing this to go on? They don't want to see that. They don't want to see any interactions. And I'm going to give you another example that stuck out to me today. I don't know if a lot of people have seen this, but there's a comedian I love, okay? His name is Nate Bargatze. He hosted the Emmys, I think, last year. I've seen him twice in person. I've seen him twice live. I brought my dad both times. We went and saw him. He is hysterical. He's a very clean comedian. He does a lot of self-deprecation, a lot of things about his own, you know, incompetence and his trials and tribulations of being a dad and funny stories about him and his wife. And it's all very relatable, very clean, very funny humor. And I just had so many great memories with my own dad going to watch him perform. And he's pretty much beloved by everyone. He's one of these guys. And while I was watching his rise, and because I saw him pretty early on, or like when people had just started to hear about him, and he's blown up over the last few years. He's now talks to Jerry Seinfeld. He does interviews in all these places. He's getting all these accolades. He's hosting award shows. And as I've seen him climb up, I thought to myself, they're going to have a problem with him. Like at some point, he's going to have a problem because he's too good. You know, he's too pure. He's too funny. He brings people too much joy. He makes people laugh. He's not mean. He's not nasty. He just seems like a genuinely funny, nice person. And nothing about that can stand for the left. Like they cannot have that. So what ended up happening was, I guess this weekend, he's a big fan of the UFC, and he went to this, and you all know the rest of the story. He went to the White House to watch this UFC match, and he didn't post any pictures of it or anything, but he took pictures with people, I'm sure. Like, he took a picture with RFK Jr. He's taken a picture with other people, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and he was at the event. If you go to this man's comment section right now, the Daily Beast wrote a story about him. The comment section is unhinged. It's all of these progressive nuts being like, I am so disappointed in you. I am so disgusted. I cannot believe you were there. You let us all down. How dare you? Don't even bother apologizing. We don't want to hear it. You're done. We all trusted you. We feel so betrayed. Psychotic stuff. And it's so different depending on where your politics lie, because if I love a comedian and he goes to an event with Barack Obama and I still think he's funny and he's, you know, not making fun of me in his stand-up routines, I would still like that comedian. They cannot tolerate not only any differing opinions, any associations with anyone who they have different opinions with. If you even have an association, if you go to an event with someone that they deem unworthy or, you know, grotesque, then just like that, you are dispensable. You are cancelable. We have to boycott. You're a terrible person. They know your soul. The second he stepped on that White House lawn and went to the UFC event, they know his soul from the inside out. They know he is a terrible person. And they went from loving this guy. They admit it in the comments. They're like, I loved you so much. I went and saw you. I thought you were so funny. What's changed? You still think he's funny. What has changed? He went to an event that you wouldn't go to, and now you're losing your minds about it. And it's so sad how we've gotten to this point. We've all lost our minds. And so take a listen to this cut to go back to the J.D. Vance thing. I just wanted to work that in. Listen to J.D. Vance on The View today with Joy Behar.
In the book, Mr. Vice President, you make a mea culpa of sorts for calling Democrats childless cat ladies.
Oh, man. Okay? My most boneheaded comment.
You say that in the book, that it was boneheaded, which it was.
Thank you.
What were you thinking when you said that?
So Joy said when we were off air that I'm fine, which I think is about the best endorsement that I'm going to get out of Joy Behar for a Republican.
Republican.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Graded on a curve here at The View. But
yeah. Joy Behar is about to get a lot of flack for that, Matt. That is not going to go well for her, because you can't do this. You can't be laughing. You can't be like making jokes with J.D. Vance. That's not allowed. In the same, and I want to read you something else here, because this is something that also came across my desk. I kind of think it all ties in. Whatever this opening is, it's like Trump derangement syndrome and my yearning for the old days where people could get along and have things in common. There's this piece in Variety, and it says, ALF star Ann Shadeen dies at 77. Family remembers her burning hatred for Trump. This woman's obituary. She leaves behind an extraordinary legacy. So she played the matriarch on ALF, on the show ALF. She leaves behind an extraordinary legacy of creative energy, whip smart humor, delight in her family, adoration for little dogs, burning hatred for Trump, passion for secondhand thrifting, and love for a good story. We are bereft without her. We loved her so much, as did all who met her, her family writes in a statement. Again, I think that a lot of people, and the comment sections on Nate Bargatze's Instagram, the responses to Republicans and Democrats having conversations on TV, all the obituaries people are writing, we are putting so much focus on these people that don't even know we exist. Like the fact that when you die, your family, one of their first thoughts is, well, we have to mention how much she hated Trump, is so sad. That should not be. And you know what? You know what? The part of it that stands out to me, Matt, because everyone saw this and were like, that's crazy. That's a crazy thing to write in an obituary, which it is. But something that I immediately thought of was there's a lot of people whose families wouldn't write this in the obituary for them, but they would definitely, it definitely wouldn't be incorrect if they did. Like factually speaking, there's a lot of people who know enough to go, I'm not going to write about her hatred for Trump in her obituary. That would be a little uncouth. But if they did decide to write it, it would pass the smell test. Like anybody who read it would be like, yeah, she really did. Because that's how central these people make it to their lives and their personalities and their day-to-day activities, is that it is one of the first things you think of. There are a lot of people who it's the least interesting thing about them that they hate Trump, but it's the thing that you think of first. It's the thing you know them for. You're like, yeah, and maybe 15 years ago, someone would have said, oh, you know, do you know Sally? Oh, yeah. She's hysterical, man. I run into her all the time. She cracks me up. Is she still sailing? Does she still like to sail boats? Oh yeah. And now 15 years later, it's like, do you know Sally? Oh my God. Do you see her Facebook post? She won't stop. She just goes crazy. It's like the people have taken the least interesting thing about them and they've made it the central part of not only their lives, but of what people know them for. And so to the point where this woman dies and her family thinks, well, what does she mean to us? Like, what does she stand for? What do we think of? Well, we think of how much she hated another person. Take the Trump factor out for a second. We think about how much she hated another human being as being something we want to remember her by. Eesh. No, thank you. Shame on that family. Like, you can't blame the lady that her family has no idea how to put together an obituary, but that's a really, really crazy move to make. 844-500-4242. When we come back, we're switching gears here. Well, we're going to talk about Epstein for a minute, because that was brought up at The View, and I have a separate Epstein story. And then in the last big chunk of this show, I want to talk about Mayor Wu. This is a recurring story that we seem to get different versions of the same story. She's fighting with a North End restaurant, which is kind of like always the headline. We'll talk about it when we come back. Stay with us.
Watch the show live. Rumble.com/TheGraceCurlyShow. This is the Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. There's still some really good cuts now coming to light of J.D. Vance on with the ladies on The View. And we will get to some of those. But right now I'm going to do the poll question, which is brought to you by Perfect Smiles. Don't be fooled by imposters with similar names. If you're unhappy with your smile, you need to visit Dr. Tam in Nashua. Call 1-844-A-PERFECT-SMILE or visit PerfectSmiles.com. Matt, what do you got for me right now?
And you could vote in the poll question by going to GraceCurlyShow.com. What grade do you give the Trump administration so far? An A, B, C, D, or F?
I'm going to say B. I thought they did a great job with the border. I think the economy, if you took out the Iran conflict and kind of the ramifications of the price of oil going up, it's now plummeting. I think that we could be looking at a very strong economy. I like what they did. There's a few things I like in the big, beautiful bill. No tax on tips, no tax on overtime. So, yeah, I'm going to say B, but there's still room for improvement.
B has 40%. A has 49%, C has 7%, D has 2%, and F has 2%.
One of the things that J.D. Vance said on The View, because they were asking him, like, you know, one of the criticisms he often has received, and he was dealing with it a lot when he was chosen as the VP, was, well, you didn't like Trump at first. It's like, yeah, most people were like, even the most diehard Trumpers had moments in the past when he first started running where they may have said something that wasn't 100% on board with Donald Trump. J.D. Vance's criticisms of him were very pointed, and he was very, very outspoken about it for a while, and then he wasn't, and he was asked about it, and he said that it was a little bit of humility is what brought him to changing his mind, that he watched what he did for his first term, and he liked it. And he appreciated what Trump was able to do, and maybe, and he thought maybe I was wrong. And I do think that that concept, the concept of having humility and realizing that you're not an expert on everything, is something that we are severely lacking in today's society, especially with the chronically online. Everyone's right all the time. And people would rather watch the world burn than admit to being wrong about something. People would rather, you know, just die on their swords, fall on their swords, than ever say, hey, I had a misunderstanding of that, or I judged that incorrectly, or I thought that was going to go away and it didn't. And so for J.D. Vance to say, yeah, I didn't like him at first, and then I changed my mind. Isn't that part of being in the United States of America? Isn't that part of being a human being? Is that you occasionally make a call on something and decide, huh, I was wrong about that. I'm going to change my mind. And they're all acting as though that's crazy, as if they haven't changed their minds on a million things over the years. I mean, for God's sakes, Sunny Hostin changed her mind on the Epstein files like 14 times over the past 12 months. She knows all about changing your mind. They've all, Whoopi Goldberg wanted Jill Biden to be the Surgeon General because she thought she was a good doctor, and then she changed her mind when she found out she's not that kind of doctor. So these women are not unfamiliar with the concept of having one opinion and then changing it later. We'll be right back. We're going to talk Epstein and Mayor Wu.
Stack it up. Stack it up with Uncle Silverman. You stack it up.
Hi, everybody. It's Silver Dave from LocalSilverMint.com and our showroom in Ware, New Hampshire. Lately, we've been having a lot of fun doing silver, gold, and platinum like we usually do. But in the most recent weeks, we've been having a tremendous demand for our product that we make called Silver Bits. That's right, Silver Bits. Little pieces of silver that you can trade for goods and services, regardless of the condition of the financial system or internet access. Silver bits holds its value like silver and gold normally would, but in smaller pieces, so you can trade them. And silver bits are made in the USA. Try Silver Bits from LocalSilverMint.com. Thanks for listening, and remember, stack it up.
For the first time ever, there are nearly 50% more home sellers than home buyers in the U.S. What can you do in this moment to get your property noticed? Conduct a voluntary auction with J.J. Manning. A J.J. Manning auction creates a competitive bidding environment, allowing the market to quickly speak and allowing you to plan your future. In a J.J. Manning auction, there are no negotiations. There are only clear auction terms. You sell as is and contingency free. J.J. Manning has the following auctions coming up for Howie Grace listeners. June 11th, an estate auction of a three-bedroom home in Hanover, Massachusetts. June 18th, a five-bedroom compound in Bedford, Massachusetts. If you have commercial, residential, or land to sell, contact Charlie Gill at 800-521-0111 or visit jjmanning.com. Call Charlie today and mark it sold.
Stack it up with Local Silver Mint, you stack it up.
Hi, everybody. It's Silver Dave from LocalSilverMint.com and our showroom in Ware, New Hampshire. Lately, we've been having a lot of fun doing silver, gold, and platinum like we usually do. But in the most recent weeks, we've been having a tremendous demand for our product that we make called Silver Bits. That's right, Silver Bits. Little pieces of silver that you can trade for goods and services regardless of the condition of the financial system or internet access. Silver Bits holds its value like silver and gold normally would, but in smaller pieces so you can trade them. And Silver Bits are made in the USA. Try Silver Bits from LocalSilverMint.com. Thanks for listening. And remember, stack it up.
Check out Meet the Experts. I sit down with Bill Broussard of JB Auto Care to discuss the latest auto trends, the folly of electric vehicles, and more. Meet the Experts, available wherever you get your How We Car Show podcasts.
Do people still get tune-ups anymore?
So the day of the tune-up has really gone to the wayside. You know, the car maker wants to sell you a car. That's where they make their money. You know, they don't want your car really going past 100,000. Now it will. If you maintain these fluids, you know, you will get 200, 300,000. You'll basically be driving it till you're sick of driving it.
Your opinion on electric cars?
At this point, I'm just not a big fan. You know, there's an agenda behind it. They're trying to get everyone into one. It's like, you know, give the consumer a choice.
What car would you stay away from? Or just a couple?
So the European cars, I'm not a big fan. Like, these cars are almost unmarketable once they get to a certain age, because who can buy them? So they got to be sold at a discount. It's hard to get people to spend money on cars for maintenance because the cars aren't broken.
Right.
So it's hard to convince people one day it's going to break.
Are you or someone you love struggling with an addiction to drugs or alcohol and want to be set free from the chains of addiction? Then call Addiction Helpline America right now to get the help you need. From drug and alcohol addiction to dual diagnosis treatment, we provide a confidential helpline to help people like you get sober and live happy, substance-free lives.
Treatment helped me get my life back. I was so addicted, the only person I could focus on was myself and what I needed. I hit rock bottom and lost everything. Through treatment, I was able to overcome those demons and focus on my family again.
I used until I overdosed and almost died. That was the end of the road for me. After seeking treatment, I now have hope. I learned skills that help me deal with life on life's terms.
800-646-4407. 800-646-4407. 800-646-4407. That's 800-646-4407.
The Grace Curley Show is on the air.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. I'm enjoying seeing all these cuts come out of JD Vans on the Ladies of the View. They kept it very civil. No walk-offs that I've seen. Very impressed. We're still waiting for the text from the Iran deal. Trump said maybe we'll get it Friday. I think that's a little absurd if it takes till Friday to get it. But that could be the day we receive the MOU, the Memorandum of Understanding. And something I just saw online, which I think is true, is that there could be stuff in this we don't like, but there could also be stuff in this that never comes to fruition. Because if what Vance is saying on all these media hits is true, this is all incremental, and they don't get things without checking off certain boxes. I don't have faith that they'll be able to check off any boxes. So this could all be for naught. This could be a moot point. as they say. Another issue they talked about on The View, which I thought Vance handled very, very diplomatically, they were asking him, oh, do we have it here? Did we pull the Epstein stuff, Matt, or did I forget to ask you to pull that for me?
I'm pretty positive we have that. Let me take a look at the cut sheet.
Okay, yeah. Pull that up for me, because there's actually Epstein is in the news today for a different reason having to do with his jail cell. Okay, let's play cut seven.
You know, one of the things you see in the Epstein emails is that Jeffrey Epstein hated Donald Trump, and that Donald Trump literally reported Jeffrey Epstein to the police. Okay, that's one of the things that came out of these files.
They were best friends for about a decade. And remember, he signed that Transparency Act under duress when some Republican women, congresswomen like Lauren Boebert, like Marjorie Taylor Greene, did not give in to his pressure of not signing. He brought Lauren Boebert into the Situation Room to pressure her into caving on not voting for that bill.
So let me respond to that. So
that's all true.
Let me respond to that. So number one is, yes, Donald Trump, he said this, he knew Jeffrey Epstein back in the 1980s. He also threw Jeffrey Epstein out of his club when he found out he was a creep and reported him to the police. That's something that the media often misses when it reports this story. They tell the fact that they knew each other in the 80s, which the president himself admits. They ignore the fact that he narked on him to the police and led ultimately to Jeffrey Epstein's downfall. To that point, Anna, the Republican Party. It's one of the things that led to the law enforcement investigation.
Because the idea that these two were best friends, that doesn't pass the smell test for me at all. I think they were social friends. I think they were acquaintances. I definitely think they went to parties together. But if we're going to start using that rule, you could argue that a lot of people in Hollywood right now were best friends with Jeffrey Epstein because they were photographed with him several times. So I don't really think that that adds up. And plus, the other part of it is you can take Jeffrey Epstein's word that they were very close friends if you believe Jeffrey Epstein, if you believe he's a truthful person, if you understand that for the last however many years of his life, he had a vendetta against Trump and was trying to destroy him. What better way to destroy Trump than trying to convince people that you were best friends with him? If you're this massive, predator like Jeffrey Epstein and you want to take someone down, you give them your endorsement. You say, hey, that's Donald Trump. He was my best friend. It doesn't matter if it's true or not. You know that that's going to be damaging to Donald Trump. And so, of course, the guy who was thrown out of Trump's club and the guy who Trump called the police on is going to be the one who hates Trump the most and tries to claim that they had this long-standing, deep relationship, in spite of the fact that plenty of the facts don't bear that out. Now, that's number one. But this actually just gives me a good excuse, Matt, to talk about this story in the New York Post about Jeffrey Epstein. It says, Epstein tried to kill himself multiple times in jail. Multiple nooses found in cell. Bombshell report claims. So an ex-New York cop and convicted murderer who briefly shared a cell with Epstein at the now-shuttered Metropolitan Correctional Center. Again, this goes back to consider the source, as Alec Baldwin once so wisely said, told the New York Times that he was point-blank asked how to make a noose by the sex trafficker days before his first reported attempt on July 22, 2019. Over the next few days, this guy, Tartaglione, said he then twice witnessed Epstein making preparations to kill himself. In one incident, he recalled Epstein had tied a sheet to a grate over a cell window, and another time woke up to find him looking a little suspicious in the darkened cell before finding a noose under his mattress. Tartaglione told the outlet that he reported both attempts to jail guards, but they laughed him off. You know, I'm reading this story, and I haven't followed the Epstein stuff that closely. I should say in comparison to other people who have really devoted more time to it. But the more they're trying to convince me that he killed himself, Matt, the less I'm buying it. You're trying to tell me that now we have these inmates who are trying to convince us. And I guess you could say, like, why would they lie about it? But I don't know. Why are they trying to convince us now? They're trying to convince me that he was making nooses, multiple nooses, and none of the guards caught on to that. And while I was reading this story, I thought, that's not an easy thing to do. Like, we all keep saying, like, oh, did he kill himself? Oh, he didn't kill himself, whatever. But think about it for a second. This is a guy who's lived a very, very privileged life, right? He's being doted on, waited on hand and foot. I'm just talking about his day-to-day, like when the luxurious elements of his lifestyle. I'm not talking about the creep stuff. I'm just talking about, you know, how he moves throughout the world in these fabulous circles, and everyone's giving him whatever he wants, and can I get you a drink, and what would you like to eat, and, you know, he's really the 1%. And he just asks somebody how to make a noose, and then he learns how to do it, and then he's successful at killing himself with it, like it's Shawshank Redemption. I just don't believe that a guy who's lived the life of Jeffrey Epstein would be that, I hate to say it like this, but would be that crafty or would have the stomach for it. How's that, Matt? I don't think this guy would have the stomach for that. To make a noose out of the mattress sheet and then successfully, I could see him trying and it not going well, but to successfully do it, I just don't know. And I know there's a million other conspiracies that people get into as to why they don't think it's fake and the missing video and this and that. I'm just talking about the guy known as Jeffrey Epstein, the spoiled, pampered, elitist punk. I don't think he would be capable of doing that. I think he would either chicken out, or he wouldn't do it right, or it would be too physically difficult for him to, like, hoist himself into it. I just don't think he'd be able to do it. And now that we have inmates being like, no, he asked me how to do it, he definitely did it himself, I'm more suspicious than ever.
Well, also, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
But also, it's like you said, why is this coming out now? If, like, we wanted to be convinced, wouldn't that be something that came out super early, right after it happened? Like, they found all these practice nooses before he actually finished the job.
Right. And you're telling me that they have Jeffrey Epstein in that cell, and then other inmates are like, hey, guys, he's trying to kill himself. He's making nooses. And the guards are just like, sure, good one. Who are these guards? It's crazy enough that they missed him doing it, but they were warned about it, and they still missed him doing it? Weird. Very weird. More suspicious than ever. Okay, now, one of the stories that I have been teasing all show, and I actually did my Instagram teaser on this today because I think it deserves a little bit of attention. Has anyone been following what's going on in the North End? We know the North End has been beefing with Mayor Wu for a very long time. And that is nothing new. But here's a new twist on the story. So there is this restaurant, okay? It's in the North End. It's called Terra Mia. And they put out an Instagram. And the Instagram had people in it holding signs that said, more pasta, no bike racks, or something like that. And they explain in the post that the city of Boston wants to bulldoze their patio in order to put in bike racks. You know, Boston, very pro-bicycle, very pro-cyclist. I don't know what terminology they're liking to use right now. Very pro-two-wheeled people on two wheels. And so they put up this thing, this post, where they're explaining that they would love if people would support them and help avoid their patio being bulldozed for a bike rack. Okay. You know, their prerogative, whatever. The comments then get infiltrated with the cyclist community. And there are certain communities that are volatile. Like, very, very, very easy to piss off. And when you do piss them off, you're unleashing the fervor of 1,000 suns. Like, you have no idea the wrath of these people when activated. Holy Spirit activate. When you poke that bear, you better have a shelter, because they're going to come at you. I would say dog people, cyclists, Disney adults. I'm probably forgetting a couple of key demos here, Matt, but there are certain groups that I've learned throughout my career in radio, if you activate them, and this is why I'm taking a huge risk here, but I'm doing it, I think it's a righteous cause, so I'm going to do it anyway. The cyclists in the comments are all just fed up, and they're telling this restaurant, here's one quote from a comment. Feel comfortable. I don't feel comfortable supporting your business if you do not care about the safety of cyclists and supporting a world where we think of the climate. So the restaurant now keeps responding back to people, trying to explain to them, like, what does bulldozing a beautiful outdoor patio do for the climate? Now, one of the recurring arguments from the bikers is that you pay the city, you pay a permit for that space. The city, it's the city's property. And so they can bulldoze that patio and put in bike racks if they want to. And that, something that was driving me nuts, I'm like reading these comments and I'm reading the back and forth. And these cyclists, first of all, very snarky. They don't seem very nice. And they're writing back to this restaurant like, so you don't own the property. You don't own the property that your patio's on. Tough luck. Sorry. Sorry, not sorry. They can do it. Sorry. And it's like, okay, that can be true. Yeah, the city can bulldoze the patio. Does that mean they should? So suddenly now that it's the city's property, you're saying that the restaurant who pays for the permit, that they shouldn't voice their opposition to the decision? Because I got news for you, cyclists. There are plenty of times where somebody's within their right to make a decision, whether it's the city or a business, and y'all don't shut the hell up about it. You guys don't go, oh, well, it's not my property, so maybe I'll sit this one out. You've never done that before in your lives. You get up in everybody's business about everything. And now this restaurant has a beautiful patio, and they want to say to the city, rethink this decision. We love this patio. We had bike racks here before, and all it did was collect abandoned bikes and graffiti, and it was an eyesore, and it wasn't used, and it wasn't a good idea. Now they can't even say their piece without being destroyed online because they are rightfully trying to make the case and trying to convince the city not to do something. Just because the city can do something, that doesn't mean they should. It doesn't mean it's the right decision. If you were reading these comments from people like, get over it. It's not your, so you don't own the property. It's the city's property. So yeah, they can put in bike racks. Yeah, we need more bike racks. Thanks. Do we though? Do we need more bike racks? Not so sure we do. These cyclists, bro, they are out of control. If you ride a bike, what happens? Like what happens to your psyche if you start doing that day in and day out? And if you're someone who rides a bike every day and you're like, I'm not crazy, I'm a nice person, then I'm not talking about you. But I'm talking about the people who ride bikes and then they become like the nastiest, most entitled group known to man. That even just seeing this post, I can't support your restaurant anymore because they don't want a bike rack in front of it because they like their patio in the summertime. And now you can't support that restaurant? I'm telling you, 978 says, I personally like to bicycle casually, but I cannot stand bicyclists with the tights that ride Massachusetts roads like they're in the Tour de France. Yeah. I get very nervous when I'm behind a bicyclist, especially if it's like they're a little wobbly. And then it's like, oh God, what are you going to wobble? Ugh, now it's going to become my problem. And by the way, you want to ride your bike? Great. And that's your prerogative. But this restaurant, everybody's got their own stuff. Everybody's got their own opinions and everybody's got their own agendas and everybody's got their own thing that they're pulling for. That's the way the world works. So you're pulling for another bike rack because Lord knows you need it. And this restaurant is hoping that they can keep their beautiful patio open in the summertime. But that's not allowed. That's not allowed. That's where you draw the line. I didn't even want to open up this can of worms because these people scare me so much. I one time ticked off the cyclist. I didn't hear the end of it. It was like that, and it was the Beagles. The Beagle community came at me with fire. Mainstream media just announced that for the first time ever, there are 50% more home sellers than home buyers in the U.S. There are literally 630,000 more home sellers than there are buyers. So what can you do in this moment to get your property noticed? What can be done with your property to set it apart from the masses? The answer is easy. Conduct a voluntary owner's auction with JJ Manning. For over 50 years, this JJ Manning Auctioneers has successfully sold for individuals, families, trusts, estates, and businesses. A JJ auction creates a competitive bidding environment, allowing the market to quickly speak and allowing you to plan your future. In a JJ Manning auction, there are no negotiations, there are clear auction terms, and you don't list your property for sale because that's what your parents did or what your neighbors did. List with JJ Manning for an auction and stand out from the pack. They've got an auction for a Grace listener coming up in Hanover, Mass, and just recently sold listener properties in Braintree, Massachusetts, Walpole, New Hampshire, and Claremont, New Hampshire. If you have commercial, residential, or land to sell, contact Charlie Gill at 800-521-0111 or visit jjmanning.com. Call Charlie today and mark it sold. We'll be right back.
More of the Grace Curley Show up next. This is the Grace Curley Show.
More sound coming out from The View. I wanted to play this because we hadn't heard much from Whoopi in these interactions. It seems like Joy Behar and Anna Navarro were the most outspoken during this sit-down with J.D. Vance. But here's a cut from Whoopi Goldberg.
Yes, I do.
Because you're talking, you were talking about people. What did black people do to this administration that has allowed it to really stigmatize folks of color? And you know how hard it is. You have folks of color in your family.
Sure.
So when you see, you know, things, the Emmett Till stuff coming down, or them doing all kinds of removal of information of black heroes, how does that sit with you?
Well, what exactly are you talking about, Whoopi? Because I know
Emmett Till
was
Emmett Till
was
the
kid.
I want
to know what
you,
she's.
You don't know
I
what I'm talking about.
To your actual point.
So in a lot of the
museums,
there's so many. Where they're taking down the actual history that happened in this country, slavery.
I think we can all understand what happened here is that she was just throwing out talking points. She was throwing out Democrat slop, and he asked her for specifics. And that's a very easy and really non-confrontational way of destroying the talking points from the left. You don't have to come off like you're some big jerk either just by saying, hey, I want to be able to answer that more specifically. What are you talking about? Can you give me some instances? And whenever they start going, well, I mean, there's just so many. No. You don't need so many. This is a chronic excuse I hear from Trump deranged people, which is they'll make an accusation. You will follow up with, well, can you give me an example? And their response is, well, there's just too many, or there's so many, or where do I start? Just one. I don't need so many. I just need one example that I can respond to. Because you're throwing out this hypothetical multiple examples, and you can't name one of them, and that's a problem. Tomorrow, we'll spend some time discussing Gavin Newsom in this DOJ probe. He is telling Trump and the DOJ to leave his wife out of it. He understands that he's caught in the DOJ's weaponization and their crossfire, but leave my wife out of this. To which I say, your wife's a public figure, bro. I've heard her talking about, you know, sitting down for these interviews, sitting down on couches to talk to other Democrats about how wonderful you are and how wonderful she is and how she swaps out the boy heroes for girls' names. She's a public figure. And if she's done something and the DOJ seems to think that maybe there's reason to be suspicious, then she is open for criticism just like anybody else, especially just like someone who's made themselves so front-facing. She's a public figure. She's going to get public scrutiny. That's how it works, bro.